are tuning in to a Miniatures Wargaming Union podcast.
For the Empire!
Check out MWUnion.com to join the wargaming community.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Drop Podcast. You're tuning into episode 38 for Friday, February the 8th, 2008. I'm your host, Stephen Casagrande, and joining me in the Drop Podcast today is Tim Gunther.
What's up?
And Chris Weigel.
Hey, hello everyone.
So I'm sure as you guys can notice, Stephen Boyce isn't here to join us today, which is a little sad. It's going to be his first episode not actually hosting the Drop Podcast. But he left it in my powers to take the reins and carry us on forward. So I'm sure Tim and Chris don't really particularly miss Steve because we all know that he's a jerk.
Amen to that.
We're just kidding, Steve.
You He-Man. I have the power. Okay.
Anyways. So in today's episode, we're going to have news from the front lines, unit of the show. We're going to also have some Army List workshops. Unfortunately, we'll be not having a roundtable discussion today. Some last-minute things came up, and we're not going to be able to do that today. And then we're going to just be talking about a few other just last-minute things at the end. So first off is news from the front lines. All right, so our first news article is going to be a Black Library short story competition, and I believe Chris is taking that, or is Tim taking
No, I'll do it.
Oh, sorry. Tim's going to lead us off there. Tim?
All right. First of all, as you heard, Black Libraries is holding a competition for short stories that they're actually going to publish. But basically, the few of the little rules for it is that it has to be about Space Marines, whether that's the Loyalists or the not Loyalists, the Chaos
corrupted guys.
Yeah, corrupted Space Marines. And a little bit about it is that first off, you write a synopsis that is no more than 500 words, along with a sample that is 500 to 1,000 words. And this will be considered with everybody else's by the Black Library's editors. And then after that, if you actually not win, but if you go on to the next round, then you write your full 7,000 word manuscript. And then after that, if they choose you then and you're the finalist, they actually will publish it, and you get paid for your work at the Black Library's short story publication payment price or whatever that is. And it ends on noon on the 3rd of March, so, and that's in just regular GMT. So you have to figure that out accordingly. And that's actually about it, I think, for that. So, yeah.
All right, awesome. So make sure you guys check that out if you're one of the more creative folk out there. I know I can't really write a story worth anything, so I'm just going to have to be skipping that one.
At least some of our guys will try that out. I know Sanchez writes little stories for the Imperial Guard.
Yes, I definitely know that some of you guys are quite talented out there, and unfortunately, I was given a talented math, not English, so I'll just be skipping that one. But anyways, moving on. I believe Chris now has a few news things to be talking about. Chris?
Yep, I got a few hobby articles. First is on the internet we found images of the new demons coming out for 40K and fantasy. They show off the demon of Nurgle, I think it was, and the
Blood Letters.
Yeah, the Beast of Nurgle and the Blood Letters, yeah. From the looks of these, they, in my opinion, I like both of them very much. And in the box, they actually come with these square and round bases, so you can use them for both 40K and Fantasy. The models will be interchangeable for both.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's definitely going to be a help.
Depending on how they're on there, get some magnets, and you can just use them for each of them. I think that'd be cool.
Yeah, that definitely work out nicely, so you can kind of feel both and save yourself a lot of money. Also, there's a couple of new Orc articles. One which is for new and experienced players is it's just some tactics Games Workshop recommends for new and old Orc players. They cover everything from units you should use to destroy tanks or give yourself fire support or, you know, just play, you know, that way you can kind of work with it to try to balance out your army as evenly as possible. And everyone knows a balanced army is a successful army. Also, there is a, they show off some of the sprue pieces for the Orc war bikes, which originally were just the sprue pieces. They didn't show anything else, but, a more recent article, shows you how to, actually, it gives you tips on actually to build them in just a couple of ways. You know, you may want to model them or make them look. Also, there's the final 40K news article is Orc Terrain, and they give you some suggestions or tips or, I guess, ideas to work with and run with about the Orc Terrain, such as like a mech shop or, you know, just stuff in general. Just, yeah. Also, some Lord of the Rings news. I know in America, the new army of Lord of the Rings, the Harad, are out. And they're on the side of evil. If you like playing evil armies, here you go. Yeah, here's a new one.
They're akin to the Easterlings, or whatever it was called.
Yeah. And there's also a couple new articles out for them. First, the miniature range is out. If you haven't seen that, there's a link to that on our front page, or you can just go to Games Workshop, click on Lord of the Rings, check it out. There's also some sprue. They show you the sprues of the Haradrim Raiders, which are like the mounted units of them. They also show the Khorasars, which seem to be a the basic unit, the basic troop unit, I guess you'd call them. They show them sprues and some painting advice for them, and also some details that you may commonly see in the Harad army. So, yeah, that's it for hobby news.
Sweet. All right, so moving on to our next piece of news. I believe we're going once again back to Chris, and we're going to be talking about the recent war newsletter that came out. Chris, take it away.
Yep, the January 08 newsletter has come out. Some new info on the game, which is nice. Yeah, they show off their first of... the exclusive first look at the Shadow Warrior, which the Shadow Warrior, I think, for some reason, in my opinion, progresses to look more like a Waywatcher than it does anything else.
That's for the High Elves, right?
Yeah, the High Elf Shadow Warrior. That's like the range DPS unit. So, they also give off some examples of some scenarios that will be you'll be able to play in war. This month it is the Norden Watch and the High Pass Cemetery, which are some like battleground scenario situation, stuff like that. They give us the first details on the career mastery system for the Warrior Priest, the Empire Warrior Priest, and the Chaos Chosen. Basically, each has three paths you can choose from. For the Warrior Priest is the Path of Salvation, Grace, and Wrath. For the Chaos Chosen, it is Strife, Retaliation, and Discord, which basically each one will give you different abilities and different sections, so you can kind of customize the way you play your character, which is much different than the original. Also, they have a preview chapter of the new Warhammer book based on Warhammer Online, Empire in Chaos. It's actually pretty good. I read it. So if you want to, check that out. some more cinematic photos, this time of dwarves and dwarf weaponry for the new cinematic they are working on. Those look...
Is that hand cannon or whatever? That looks pretty cool. Bloodthirster.
Yeah, they're really awesome looking. You have a zone overview of a high elf area called Avlorn, which seems like a relatively flat area except for the mountains running through the middle of it. But
yeah,
it's kind of...
It's going to have forested, be mostly forested, so that's not going to be a problem.
Yeah. So, also, one of the High Elf public quests, you actually get to go take on a Hydra and the trainer guy. I don't know what you would call them.
Beastmaster?
Yeah, Beastmaster. That's it.
There we go.
That's the word I was looking for. But, yeah, you actually get to kill a Hydra and their Beastmaster. So, that looks like a lot of fun.
Cool. So it looks like that there's a lot of news on the war front these days.
Yep. Yeah, just another thing on the war newsletter. If you want to check up on any of these, you can actually go subscribe to the war newsletter. But we also have it on our front page on the website, so you can go check it out there as well.
That's right. All right, and moving on to our next news topic. It's going to be Black Industries stops something very, very important. And I'm going to let Tim take that away.
On the 28th of last month, January, Black Industries announced that they are no longer going to be producing either Warhammer Fantasy or Warhammer 40K role-playing. So, and instead, they're going to focus all their efforts and I think merge the Black Industries people into Black Libraries so they can get their or do better on their novels.
Yeah.
which is really sad considering in my opinion the role playing fantasy and 40K really opens up a new view of these two universes or the single universe depending on how much you know about it, but it just really lets you feel and discover what the life is like in these places, and it's especially kind of annoying and saddening because 40K roleplay just came out. But however, the good news is that they are actually from I think February 1st to the last that they're going to be putting that they're going to be doing their thing, which is in October, I think, is they're going to put out new materials for it. Let me see here. Just
supplements, see. Like online supplements,
like little supplement things,
like extra scenarios, and maybe like a campaign here or there.
Well, no, actually, more like they have vehicle rules that they added, and hopeful and career mementos, which is like skull fragments or little religious artifacts or something like that. But they're actually not going to be stopping until October, which is the in September, the last of the Warhammer 40K roleplay things that they made is coming out, and then they're going to continue till a month after that, putting out little things for it. And so in October is when they're actually going to be shutting down. And I actually don't know if it's going to be for good, like permanently. However, hopefully at some point in the future, they will reopen and we'll have some new materials from them.
Well, in my opinion, they're definitely going to have to at least revisit the material at some point in time. Like, it's... so much time and investment that they put into this product line, and it's become so successful already that it wouldn't even surprise me if they're doing this on purpose to, like, keep people excited over a period of time or to kind of keep the market built up for it, sort of thing. I'm not 100% sure exactly what they're doing. Maybe it's just their goal that they want to release a whole bunch now, get everyone playing it for a while, and then revisit it later to then sell more to the players who played it a lot and really want to stick with it. So,
Yeah, because I was thinking that it's really odd that they would do this and permanently be down, considering the core rulebook for 40K rule play was sold out at the Black Industry site the day that it came out.
It was already sold out. Yeah, I was going to say, it was sold out on pre-orders alone. It wasn't even like people actually had a chance to actually order it, and I found that really odd. Just, you know, you have a product that so many people are excited for. I mean, the collector's edition sold out in 6 minutes or something like that. The core rulebook, which I actually just got my copy today, sold out just on pre-orders alone. So people weren't even allowed to order it the day it came out. So I definitely do not understand, or I can't even venture a guess at what's going on.
Just another thing on that, though. If you actually want the Warhammer 40K roleplay Dark Heresy rulebook, just because you can't get it off of Black Industries doesn't mean you can't get it off of somewhere like Amazon.com.
Oh, yeah, it'll probably still definitely be in production for a very long time.
Some of the pre-orders, quite a few of the pre-orders are actually the pre-orders that they give to the businesses who buy up a stock of them. So if you have a local bookstore or something that has Warhammer Fantasy roleplay stuff, you might look there and see if they have the Dark Heresy or rulebook.
Yep, I actually just got my pre-order from Amazon.com. So.
Oh, I see. Yep. So you got it off there. I should be heading to the mall hopefully this weekend. I got to pick a couple things up. So I know that there's a Chapters nearby my university here. So I'm going to hopefully see that that they have it there, and we'll see, of course, how expensive it is. But that's another story. You know, university poor.
it should be around $50. The thing that I like about Amazon.com, though, is that I think you can get it for like $31.
Yeah, I paid $32 and free shipping for mine.
Nice. Yeah, Chapters has a tendency, though, to give quite large discounts just because they're such a big store. So
it says in
Barnes & Noble's might actually be connected. So Barnes & Noble's is huge.
It says actually they left the price tag on the back of the book. I'm looking at it now. It says U.S. it's $50 and Canadian it's $63.
So yeah.
I see. Yeah. All right.
I have to scrounge up an extra couple of bucks, but it's worth it.
All right. So moving on now. And Chris, did you have anything else to say in terms of news there? Is there some more topics that you just quickly wanted to hit up?
No.
All right. Never mind. There's just one last one then that I'm aware of, and it is, I'm just going to highlight it quickly because I'm sure some of you guys are going to be like, why are you mentioning this? And some of you guys might be thinking, oh, that's pretty cool. But today, Blizzard announced that there's going to be a World of Warcraft miniatures game. So since we are the Miniatures Wargaming Union, I figured I would bring it up, just put it out there in case anybody was actually interested. It's from what I managed to gather on their website. It'll be coming out fall 2008. They're launching this due to the success of the trading card game, and it's not going to be similar to a 40K or a fantasy battle, like where you have many units and you fight it out. It's going to be more along the lines of an RPG where you just have your one guy, kind of more along the lines of the actual World of Warcraft game, hence WoW.
I thought it might. So, I was actually thinking that it might go along the lines of what Rackham or Privateer Press does, where you have a small group of like five or six guys and then go at it with another person.
Right. So if you guys want any more information about it, there's not much out right now. There's about four models on their website. You can get three-dimensional viewer versions of it, so you can rotate around and see them. You can go to wowminis.com, check it out. Just to let you guys know, their plan is to make them pre-painted miniatures too. So it's not going to be along the lines of most games out there where you paint them yourselves, so it's going to be just pre-painted, here you go, and then it'll probably have a set of rules and everything like that that they'll follow, but it's not going to be out till fall. So all right, and that's the end of news from the front lines today. Our next section is going to be unit of the show.
For me, Sons of Sigma, for the Empire!
All right, so for our unit of the show today, we have Chaos Warriors. So I'm just going to go through a little bit of back history, and then we're going to briefly talk about some pros and cons of these models. Chaos Warriors. Mortals are what make up most of the Chaos armies and are most numerous and widespread of all Chaos followers. Mortals are usually from the Chaos Wastes of the North. Most start out as Chaos Marauders, and it's not until they have found more favor in the eyes of the Dark Gods that they become fully-fledged Chaos Warriors. From there, some become mighty Demon Princes, though most just become a gibbering Chaos Spawn, a thrice-cursed beast who is forever struck in the state of Chaos. Only in death can it finally be put to rest, and that is all that it exists for. Many mortals often align themselves with a particular god, and it shows. Slaanesh followers... Did I say that right? I always get the Chaos god's names mispronounced.
Yeah, it's Slaanesh.
Slaanesh, all right. Slaanesh followers usually become very vain and self-obsessed, with an arrogance no normal man could ever achieve. Khorne followers seek to better themselves in battle and often take pleasure in cutting down enemy after enemy and taking more skulls for the Lord of Skulls. Nurgle followers take on a great grossness, which is pretty nasty, usually featuring bloated stomachs, rotting skin, and mank flies and sores covering their bodies. Stranger still are the followers of Tzeentch. Did I say that one right?
Yep.
All right, sweet. I'm getting better at this. For they often have many mutations visited upon them, such as bird-like traits or feathers or even strange general appearance which seems to warp time itself. All right, so that was a quick history there of the Chaos Warriors. And now we're going to talk about some pros and cons and some tactical advice for them. So in general, some of their good points are that they are tough and strong. They have some good leadership, pretty good armor save, and access to the various marks of Chaos, which are effective in battle, making them hard-hitting at range and strike hard in combat. Of course, the cons of this unit, though, with all that armor and good stats and everything, comes with the expense of a high points cost and the relatively slow units due to their much higher armor compared to some of the other models in the Chaos range. All right, so just to give some quick tactical advice for some Chaos collectors out there, these two factors in the cons create a severe problem in which all infantry units struggle to. And this mainly is trying to get their points back because opponents can usually easily avoid them. Like, if you think about it, when you're facing an opponent and you see quite a heavily stronged unit, you're not going to go straight into combat with them. You're going to try and do your best to pick them off from a distance or use something even more powerful to take them out. That's so that, you know, that your units just don't get completely steamrolled by these Chaos Warriors. So, of course, how do you counter this problem is always the question that you have to ask yourself when you're fielding these units. You're going to want to try and use some magic, some ambushing beasts, sorry about that, or some form of shooting like the Hell Cannon, man-eaters with handguns, or lead belchers to force your opponent to come to you. This way, if they're not in close combat, they're still a target of your ranged units. However, this is always a difficult problem with Chaos because of their lack of ranged units and other four factors in Chaos. They just don't have the number of missile troops that most other races have. They're mainly close combat oriented.
I think Chaos really has two missile troops. One is the Hell Cannon, and the other one, not including magic casters, are actually the Marauders on horses, where they have the throwing axes.
Yeah.
But still, they got to get in real close to throw those axes to get the throwing axes off. It's like 6-inch range, so you really, I think lead belchers or man eaters with handguns definitely could.
Right, ogres, because you definitely want to get your Chaos Warriors into close combat, because if your opponent just stays there, stands where they are, and continues just to pick off at you, and they're allowed to maneuver into their optimum attack positions, then you're going to end up wasting all those points on those troops. Because the idea is that you want to kill more points worth of enemies than those troops cost you in the first place. If not, it was a liability, not an asset, unless you have some sort of wall plan of walling or something, I don't know. Anyways, there's always the other issue of choosing whether you want to make your Chaos Warriors chosen or a normal squad. Well, basically, because you can only make one unit in your army chosen, this upgrade is usually better suited for your knights and leave your warriors unmarked. Sorry about that. So that you can get a few more guys to benefit from the numbers and rank system of close combat. Because they're already expensive to begin with, the chosen status is better suited for a unit that's already going to be more beneficial towards it. For example, like I just said, the knights. The warriors themselves, you can save those points and instead spend them on physically just more units. So it's up to you in those two cases. Both are great options. In terms of equipment, if you choose some Chaos Warriors, a great weapon is always a great idea. But personally, in our opinions, we think that the regular hand weapon and shield is best because they only have heavy armor to begin with. They don't have some sort of magic enhanced armor. So with a great weapon, they'd only have a 5+ save, which in my opinion, and I'm sure with a lot of other people's opinions, is not really strong enough for the relative expensive cost of the models. So sure, they're going to be doing less damage in close combat with a hand weapon and shield, but it's kind of best to use them as your anvil and use your knights to do the killing, so to speak.
Yeah, with a 5+, they're going to go down fairly fast, and for that kind of point cost, it's not really worth it.
Exactly. So even just upping it up to the going with the shields, you get the 4+ save in close combat and shooting, and so now you have a 50-50 chance of for your save rolls. So.
Yeah, I was about to say, if you take the great weapons, I mean, you only have about a 33% chance of actually making the save. As soon as you throw that shield on there in combat, their save goes up to 50%. I mean, that 17% can really really help you out when it comes to making those saving throws, because you never know how many fours you're actually going to roll when you need fives.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's all about the dice gods looking friendly down upon you. So.
They hate me, I know that.
We all think that they do. Although probably with you, somebody might be giving you a load of dice, eh?
Yes, but when my tree man went against a giant one game, and he missed every attack for two straight turns. Didn't even hit, or I didn't even have to roll missed. I didn't even roll to wound rolls. It was horrible.
It's like, oh, I'm going to cry.
Well, I rolled and nothing happened, so I was like, okay, next time at least I'll be able to roll a wound shot. Nothing. Again. Tree man dies. That's fantastic. I have a giant coming at me now.
Moments like that.
Bye-bye archers.
Moments like that definitely make you wish that you had performed your official sacrifice before the game to the dice gods.
Yeah.
I hear your brother is fairly annoying.
I do not support killing anything in any way, shape, or form to appease the dice gods.
That's why we give them fruit.
Anyways, moving on. There's a series of marks that you can give your units if you so choose to. So out of all the marks, there is the Mark of Chaos Undivided, Nurgle, Khorne, Tzeentch, and Slaanesh. And so I'm just going to go quickly over them just so you guys know what they are. Mark of Chaos Undivided is, in our opinion, definitely by far the best, which is reroll psychology tests. It's like, yes, awesome. So I'm just going to move on just give you guys our opinions on the rest of them. Mark of Nurgle, kind of a waste of points, as in you're never going to really have enough guys to outnumber them to use fear. Chaos Warriors are already a more smaller core unit than other races, just because of their more expensive fact. So the odds of you actually outnumbering them, not really going to happen. Mark of Nurgle, kind of a little pointless.
I think that'd be okay for maybe against skirmishers, but not much else.
Quite possibly, but yeah. I think this is, we're just giving more general advice here. So
okay. Yep.
Mark of Khorne, you do get an extra attack, but you're even more likely to be led away from battle. So they're not going to really pay attention to what you want them to do so often due to their frenzy. So kind of worth it. Yeah, you get an extra attack, but you have to make sure you're going to actually get into close combat for it to be effective.
And if you do, you don't accidentally run yourself off the table.
Yeah,
chasing everyone down.
Kind of with the whole frenzy thing, because, yeah. So it can be good, can be bad. You kind of have to judge it based on who your opponent's going to be. So if it's going to be a multi-gamed tournament, you may not want to go with that. Mark of Chaos Undivided is, in our opinion, in that case, a little better in terms of the rerolling psychology. Mark of Zeech, you lose the benefit of Undivided, which is a big loss, of course, for the sake of one extra power dice. So if you go with Zeech instead of Mark of Chaos Undivided, you don't get, obviously you don't get Mark of Chaos Undivided, and you only get one extra power dice. So one extra power dice, rerolling psych tests. So
as much as I love Zeech, it's not worth
exactly.
It at all.
It's, you might as well just beef up your caster more, or
yeah,
or find another way to get that extra power dice if you really need it, or you're gonna, yeah, exactly. It's just not worth it. If these are Chaos Warriors, you're gonna want to put something on them that'll directly benefit them, just in our opinion.
Yeah.
And finally, the last mark, of course, is Slaanesh, and ITP is great to combine with this, with the Raptorius standard, and you'll have.
Sorry,
what was that, Tim?
Rapturous.
Once again, not an English student. Anyways.
What are you majoring in again? It's not English, apparently.
Physics, all right. Physics. Yes, that's right.
Don't worry,
I have to take quantum physics in September. It's going to be sweet. Oof. Anyways, moving back on topic. using the Mark of Slaanesh and that standard, you get some really hard-hitting units, which is great. So, in our opinion, Mark of Chaos Undivided and Slaanesh are definitely some of the greatest ones. However, you're going to have to balance out which one is going to be better for your units against who you're facing. Honestly, once again, if you're playing a multi-game tournament where you're not allowed to change your army lists, Mark of Chaos Undivided is definitely going to still be your main advantage, in our opinion.
Yeah.
I'm sure Tim and Chris would agree with me there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, Zeech, you just boost out your caster. It's not worth the points. Nurgle, you need to outnumber to cause fear. That's not happening with Chaos Warriors at all. Khorne, you have to make sure you don't run yourself right off the table, because I've seen that happen, where people get frenzied, frenzy unit runs, they chase after, they run off the table, there goes the chosen unit.
It's like, and there goes a lot of points.
Yeah, there goes a ton of points down the drain. So yeah, I would definitely say Mark of Chaos Undivided is easily the best.
Oh yeah, which is what I would hope, something that they would change in later revisions of the Chaos units, because that is, like, choosing between all the different marks is definitely an advantage, but if one of them is clearly much better than all of them in a more general situation, it doesn't really, the purpose of having an option is kind of lost. So
I think we need to equal them out to make it basic, to make it fit more with how your army works, and less with just it being for only working kind of, damn it, only really affecting your single unit of Chaos Warriors. Have it a more general thing where they're equaled out, so that if you are playing Slaanesh, it works with your Slaaneshian army. If you're playing a Zeech army, it works with your Zeechian army, and so on and so forth for everything else.
Right.
If you kind of get what I mean.
I'm sure some people might.
I'm sure other people will, but I don't.
Fair enough. All right, so that's going to be the end for our opinions. I'm just gonna briefly hit up some listener tips that we got. All right, so from one of our users, or listeners, sorry, we were sent in the following tip. Depending on the mark you choose to give your warriors, you gain special benefits to your warriors, such as a hard-hitting, well-armored unit. You definitely leave an impact in the enemy ranks. Use the marks to your advantage. Get your warriors as quickly into combat as possible for the most effectiveness. From Ray Caleb. I apologize if I pronounced your last name wrong. And if I pronounced your first name wrong, then there's something wrong. So his opinion is just make sure you just, like as Tim said, make sure you pick the right one that fits your army best, and, you know, get those warriors into close combat as soon as you can. If not, then there's a lot of points that are just going to go down the drain that you could have used. So,
pretty much all of them, except for the Zeech one, will really help you out in combat. So definitely go with his tip and definitely get your warriors in combat fast.
Right. All right, so that's it for the unit of the show. Next episode, we'll be discussing the 40K Necron Warriors. So if you have any tips or tricks on this unit, send them to mwunion@gmail.com. That's mwunion@gmail.com. All right, and we're just going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to have our Army List Workshop.
Want to get the latest scoop on what's happening in the World of Games Workshop? Then stop by the Miniatures Wargaming Union, where we have up-to-date news on all your favorite Games Workshop games. Also home to the top wargaming radio shows like The Drop Podcast and Podhammer. Check out our forums and join our ever-growing community today. Check out the Miniatures Wargaming Union at www.mwunion.com.
All right, and we're back. So we're going to do now the Army List Workshop. All right, so we had an army list sent in this week, and it was a Space Marine army list. So I'm just going to quickly read off what was sent in, and then I'm going to send it over to Chris and Tim to give off some strong points, some weak points, and some suggestions to maybe help improve their army list a little bit. All right, so Alex Knags...
Or Nags. I don't know how to say that. Sorry.
We apologize.
I think from now on, all listeners need to give us their name and then a phonetic version of their name. Just yeah, so we don't embarrass anybody anymore. Anyways, Alex K, there we go, sends in his 750-point Space Marine Army List. And this is what he said. This is a 750-point Army List for my custom chapters, Fathers of the Forge. They have heed the wisdom of the ancients and scions of Mars. I think I said that right also. The major drawback is flesh over steel. All right, so his list consists of his HQ choice is one tech marine with full servo harness and an extra wound on a bike. His elite choice is one vulnerable dreadnought with a cell cannon and storm bolter with Furios assault. His troop choices are 3 5-man Space Marine squads, each with a missile launcher. His fast attack choice is 1 Landspeeder Tornado with heavy bolter and assault cannon, and his heavy support is a dreadnought with las cannon and missile launcher. And the total points for this apparently comes out exactly to 750 points. I didn't add it up, so I'm just going to assume that he's telling us the truth. So since while I was trying to get the recording program to work before the show, Chris and Tim were doing most of the discussion on thinking up some ideas. I'm just going to give it over to them and let them go nuts on some ideas. Guys?
Okie dokie. Well, I think one of the definite strong points of the army list is the fact it is the dreadnoughts. And another, I think, strong point of the army list is the fact that he took the drawback of flesh over steel, which means you can't take a Predator Annihilator, you can't take a Crusader, and you get an 0-1 choice of a Land Raider, Whirlwind, Vindicator, blah, 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 which I think is smart because it doesn't really affect his army list, and it doesn't really state in the Space Marine Codex that it has to directly affect your army list. So I think that's definitely a...
Now, what is the advantage exactly for Flesh over Steel? I haven't had a chance to look over some...
Flesh over steel is a drawback for the Space Marines for this one.
Oh, I see. He went through the custom.
Yeah, he adds two, and then he does a big minus one, which is the flesh over steel. It's just big minus one. However, it doesn't affect his
army list too much because it's only a 750-point army. So,
you know, I don't know how many people are going to be throwing a Land Raider into a 750-point army.
Right, exactly.
Except for Tim.
Fair enough. Yeah, I actually only had a chance, I think, once or twice to actually look over the custom chapters design. So,
I really think it's cool. I wish they would add that for every... actually put out a separate codex that has that same thing for every single race. I think that'd be really cool.
Interesting. All right, anyway, so Chris, finish your thought there on the strong points.
I just think the strong point is definitely the fact that he is fielding two dreadnoughts, and the fact that Flesh Over Steel doesn't really affect his excuse me, his army too much. But I don't know. But Tim, what do you think?
No, I actually think that's good. It looks fine to me. However, we did have some little, not necessarily nitpicks, but things that would change it up in a way that, for a 750-point army, would make it very interesting.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Exactly. Well, we'll get to that though for the suggestions. So,
I think one of the major actually weak points of his army list is the fact that I think it's a strong point and weak point that he has two dreadnoughts. Mainly the fact that it's such a small army point value, and the two dreadnoughts alone take up about a quarter of the total point. Take up about 250 points, leaving about 500 points for everything else.
Yeah, so I think that vegetable alone, doesn't that take up about 160 or so?
It's about 130 points or something like that.
Oh, okay. Okay, never mind.
Yeah, it's about 135 points, I think, for the Venerable.
You said 160 before, and I was like, okay, whatever.
No, and then the other Dreadnought, I think, is also 135. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I just think the fact that he has two dreadnoughts is a drawback, just because it takes up so many points. It's taking up a good third of his army.
Just another drawback is that he has his dreadnought is for his heavy support is a last cannon and missile launcher, and then he has also his troop choices also have each of his three 5-man squads has a missile launcher as well. Which
that is a lot of anti.
That's
anti-armor.
and an armor, which I don't think you're going to have a whole lot of in a 750-point army battles. So that's just my thought on that.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's actually okay if you go up against, like, Imperial Guard, if they have a fair few tanks, but still that last cannon is...
The last cannon and the four missile launchers, I think that's going a little bit overkill on armor, and I don't think at 750 points you're really going to see that much armor. But, yeah.
That's just my thought on that.
Yeah, definitely.
Alright, so on to the suggestions for this army list. First off, decided that would be good, first off, is the Tech Marine is great and everything. However, take him off the bike, and that gives you, I think, 20, 30 points back. And then actually get rid of the Venerable Dreadnought altogether as the elite choice. And then you actually could take away a 5-man Space Marine squad. And what this does is give you a over 200 points of, I think, 250 points of pointage back, but then the thing that you really won't see in a 750-point army too often is Terminators, and what you do with 200 of those is for your elite choice, choose a Terminators with Lightning Claws, which you can deep strike into your opponent's forces, and on a 750-point army, that's going to do a lot of damage in their forces. And stuff. And then our other thoughts on that was with the remaining points, you can each of the missile launchers for the remaining two troop choices of the five-man Space Marine squads is you'll take away the missile launchers and instead add a heavy bolter to those, which the minus the two missile launchers is minus 20 points plus. Those two extra 5 points each is 10 points. So basically, you have 10 points plus the 5 extra that you have because with all those addition subtractions with the addition of the Terminators, it'll give you 745. So Space Marines are 15 a piece a model. So all in all, you'll be able to add 4 more Space Marines, giving your each of your 5-man Space Marine squads. Now they'll be a 7-man Space Marine squads with a heavy bolter.
Yeah, we and Tim were discussing this, and we were looking at the Tech Marine, and we really like the Tech Marine as the HQ choice with the servo harness and the extra wound, but the fact of tacking on the extra 30 points to throw him on a bike didn't really make too much sense to us.
Especially if you don't have bikes anywhere in your
your army.
Anywhere else in your army, meaning since he is now faster than most of the rest of this, he's going to be he's going to be at the enemy unless you just dawdle around with him. He's going to be at the enemy far faster than any of the other guys, than any of your other troops. Choices minus the land speeder. So he's going to be out there all alone, and he has an extra rune, but that's not going to help much when he has everybody else just pounding on him, basically.
Yeah, I mean, basically, he'll get into combat, and he'll be sitting there, up there, by himself. Sure, yeah. You gain the extra 30 points, but, I mean, you lose a movement of, like, 8 or 9, and you lose the plus 1 toughness, but... if you throw him up there like that, he's going to be the number one target.
Because he's your HQ, so he's automatically a
primary target.
Plus,
and then if you throw him out there in the open by himself, it's like feeding...
Right, the idea of putting your HQ on a bike is so that they can go with your bike squads, go around, and then they get the extra leadership and abilities and stuff like that of your HQ unit. Not so that you can rush him into battle and then have him killed. Plus,
get destroyed utterly.
He's a tech marine. It's not like
he's not a super close combat fiend.
Unless your idea is to use this tech marine on a bike to quickly go back and forth between your dreadnoughts to like repair them or something. But
yeah, just still that. I don't know.
I wouldn't think that would be worth it, in my opinion. But
yeah.
Well, without that, subtraction of that venerable dreadnought, you can use him up by the by your heavy support dreadnought, and
constantly
you can
repair himself.
Yeah, but he wouldn't need a bike to keep up with the
dreadnoughts. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Just the bike don't know how to justify that with this army.
Yeah.
There we go. So, all right. So moving on from the bike.
Also, The elite venerable dreadnought, as I mentioned, the two dreadnoughts are great, but in a 750 point battle, they just seem like a bit too much. I mean, they make up so much of your army.
Right, and you can't use them to capture table corners either. So if you're not playing a full out, you first person to lose all their units match, you're not going to be able to. Can you hold table corners with dreadnoughts? I don't think so.
I don't think you can.
No, because they can't.
If we're wrong on that, don't flame us too bad.
Again, right? I don't have my books with me again, so it's been a couple months now since I've had a chance to read over the rules exactly. But yeah, you want to have a good body of some sort of troops to capture table corners if you need to, if you're playing that sort of map. Because if you guys have ever read some of the battle reports from the White Dwarf magazine, it always ends up being, oh, this player has 0 table corners and this player has 1. They win. All right. So...
Nah. it's just the fact that the dreadnoughts, they just seemed like they were taking up so many points. So instead of taking those dreadnoughts, you could just deep strike 5 assault terminators or lightning claws for 200 points. The advantage to a lightning claw is, first, you get the plus 1 attack for having 2 hand weapons. And also, they count as a power weapon, but on top of
power weapons,
the enemy loses an armor save, and on top of that, you get to reroll missed to wound rolls.
Is this let's see here, plus 1 attack, reroll wound, no armor save.
Yeah, and they deep strike, so you can basically drop them right behind a enemy tank or unit or anything.
Rip that
lightly armor
or
tank
something.
Absolutely just manhandle and just stabby and cutty and make sushi.
Stabby and cutty.
Yes, I said stabby and cutty.
Alright, so that's definitely one of your guys' suggestions then. So instead, get rid of one of the dreadnoughts and to make some more points and hopefully put in a squad of Terminators instead.
For the troops, I know we have 15 now, but you get rid of 1 and then you're left with 10 altogether. But
right, because your Terminators would make up for that five. So.
But the thing about your five-man squads is if they have anything like a, I don't know if they'd use like a mortar or anything that has multiple hits or just one big hit, that's going to, if they roll correctly, that's going to take out one of your squads, just wham, in one big shot.
Right, or even if like three guys die, now you're going to be pressured from all the... you're going to be below like 50%. You're going to be you're going to be below 50%. Yep, below 50%. One more guy dies. You know, if you have one guy, if four guys die in your five-man squad, you're below a quarter unit strength.
Yeah.
And then you have to deal with all the psychology tests. But then, of course, then you have the last man standing thing. But but still, you just have so many psychological type issues.
And I think, don't they have to have five models to actually count as a scoring unit?
I think they have to have over 50% unit strength to score.
Yeah, so if
three of them die,
the unit's automatically pretty much useless for capturing anything.
Right, it's better to at least guarantee one table corner than to take your like slightly less chance at taking two, so to speak. Like for example, 2 5-man squads. Sure, they can technically capture 2 table corners, but the odds of them taking a couple hits each, because they both count as separate targets, for in terms of shooting, like you know, one squad of your enemy can shoot one squad, and one squad can shoot the other squad. You know, if they lose a couple units, they can no longer capture table corners at all. So sometimes it's better just to capture the one.
So that's why we got rid of one of the five-man squads, and instead having 3 5-mans, we upped the 2 other 5-mans by 2 more to make them a 7 total, which just gives them a better chance to do things, and I think just makes them better suited for a low-point cost army as a whole.
Right.
Or any army, really. I don't know why you'd have a 5-man squad of them in even a bigger army, unless you really wanted to be tactical with them. But yeah,
or if you need the kill points.
Did you guys think that the missile launchers were a good idea or a bad idea in terms of keeping them?
I think they're good, but they're not justified in the 750 point army, especially when you have lightning claws and junk on your termies, and then you have the last cannon and missile launcher on your dreadnought. On your remaining dreadnought, that's a lot of armor kill junky stuff. So, just not really worth it. That's why we thought that the replacing those with the heavy bolters would be a lot better.
Right.
Because in 750 points, you're going to see a lot more infantry than you are going to see tanks and bigger units like a Carnifex or something like that. You're more likely to see, you know, Gaunts or Guardians or Chaos Marines, you know, something like that.
Right.
Also, on top of that, I was thinking that if you, depending on what army you're fighting against, Flamers might actually be good there as well. If they have something that is a in-your-face army, so that you just whoosh,
get rid of the heavy bolters for the Flamers.
How much does the Flamers cost?
I don't know.
I believe slightly less than the other heavy weapons, but that just reminds me of how OP Flamers are in Dawn of War in the beginning stages.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah. Trust me. I know. You and Steve.
You guys have flame, taken the blunt rushing end of some of our Flamer rushes and all your units.
Me and Gillies versus you and Steve, and you guys Flame Rush. It's just like, that's just, it's just, no. Oh,
we can't even keep up. It's so sad. Anyways. But anyways, nevertheless, let's just say heavy bolters for now. You know, see how that goes.
Yeah.
Did you guys think about the fast attack at all?
Oh, Flamers are 6 points, so they're actually one more point than a heavy bolter.
Really?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I guess you could.
I guess with the area of effect, so.
Yeah.
So I guess potentially you could be hitting more models than a heavy bolter, but I don't know. And you can run and shoot with Flamers too.
If you want Flamers and you think they're something that you'd like against a certain army, you can always tweak this a little bit and add those.
Yeah, definitely.
But on the fast attack, I actually thought the Land Speeder Tornado, which has a heavy bolter and a salt cannon, was actually a fairly good idea, just because it can basically lay down suppressing fire for your other things and stuff like that.
And also the definitely, and it's quickly moving. Usually, in bigger matches, you wouldn't recommend one Land Speeder, but in a small match like this, it's definitely better than some of the other choices, and you could definitely lay down a lot more fire, considering there's a lot less units you actually have to hit, and a lot more less units actually shooting at you.
Right. You know, fair enough. All right, so that's... and we decided to also still go with one of the Dreadnoughts, correct? With the Laz Cannon and Missile Launcher for the heavy support.
Yeah, since you don't have the since you don't have any of the missile launchers for the troops, and you don't have your and you have your Terminators, which can take out tanks and stuff in the back. You only really need the one Dreadnought
fire support, Hellfire.
Damn it! What word am I thinking of?
Cover fire.
To reassure that you have all of your all of the armor in your opponent's army covered, and you're able to take that out relatively easily and quickly.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm just going to quickly just summarize the army list, and then we're going to move on. This segment is already getting a little longer than we were expecting.
Yep.
So, all right. So in summary, for HQ, we went with a one tech marine with full servo harness and an extra wound for 115 points, an elite choice of 5 assault terminators with lightning claws for 200 points. In terms of troop choices, 2 7-man space marine squads with both with heavy bolters for 110 points each, fast attack, 1 landspeeder tornado with heavy bolter and assault cannon for 80 points, for heavy support, a Dreadnought with Laz Cannon and Missile Launcher for 135 points, and that comes to a grand total of 750 points right on the dot, according to Chris.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure
about math. I double-checked my math.
Oh, I'm sure.
And also, if you want to get rid of the heavy bolters for the flamers, you add, it's 111 points for the squads, and I'm pretty sure your opponents aren't going to complain too much about 2 points, and if they do, just blow their heads off with the heavy bolters.
There you go.
Make life easy.
So if you guys want to leave some comments about our choices, or maybe you guys have some different ideas, maybe that you think works better, maybe some other pros or cons that you'd like to just highlight, don't forget to just go to our forums on our main site at mwunion.com. Just go to our forums. Don't forget to sign up. And you guys can leave some comments about it, some other tips maybe. And you know, comment on our suggestions. Did we make some good choices or some bad ones? So looking forward to seeing your guys' comments. All right, so our next section that we're just going to quickly do probably is just going to be, it's going to be what we designated as a roundtable discussion, but unfortunately what we originally had planned cannot happen tonight due to various reasons. So instead tonight for a roundtable discussion, we're going to have Tim just quickly talk about a couple of 40K roleplay thing. Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to really see any of the details about the 40K roleplay, so I don't know. Like, I've read a lot of the Dungeons & Dragons books, or the mainly like the core rulebook and a few of the supplementary books back a few years ago. So I have a general idea on how that kind of goes. So I was wondering, what are the different types of classes that you can play in 40K roleplay?
All right. First off, for the classes, you have, I think, 6 or 7. Classes are... Oh, 8. Okay. Those classes are fairly generalized. However, just because you're, like, an adept doesn't mean that you work for a specific... For a guardsman, just because you're a guardsman doesn't mean you are actually a part of the Imperial Guard. You could be a mercenary or whatever. Guardsman is just the general.
So it's kind of just like a general idea. You have a gun, you have some medium-ish armor, you kind of like combat. That's just general idea, I would assume, right?
Yeah. But for the things on the classes themselves, the first one that they show is the Adept, which is like a kind of a scribe of sorts, and then they have the Arbitrator, which is kind of the police officer of the first millennium.
It's kind of like that. What is it in Necromunda? The Enforcers or something like that.
Yeah, that's the same thing. Enforcers are
Basically, you're that. It's pretty cool.
And then they have the Assassins, which can do anything from a extreme long range to close combat and sneaking around. They're kind of the Thief class, almost. Well, sorry there. And then you have the Cleric, which is obviously the Imperial Cult Cleric. And then actually, I don't know much about them. I think they might do some healing kind of stuff, but I haven't really looked into them much. I'll have to get into that later.
I think you can, because, where is it? I don't know. Never mind.
They might be adept in healing, but you don't have spells that heal. Instead, you use, like, a med pack or whatnot.
And then I think that's what it's like.
Yeah, like I said, there's the guardsmen as well, which you have, and then the psyker, which is really awesome. I actually rolled the psyker that has, when all is said and done, he'll actually have somewhere around, for willpower is the main thing for psykers, he'll have somewhere around 70, which if you don't know, for Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay and Warhammer 40K Roleplay alike, use a 2d10s or a d100 to roll for... Like if something succeeds, it's usually a D100 on your skill test. So I have to roll a 70 or less for it to work, and that's pretty awesome considering
and,
50 to 60, then, 40 to 50.
And that's right off the bat. That's
no,
just
that's
starting
a, not right off the bat. That's
it's not.
A,
oh, my
no, I have. I would have characteristic ups, you actually spend experience, which the willpower is 100, 250, 500, and 750. So I have to do the 250, 500, and 750 to get up there. But either way, that's a lot less than the 2000s and stuff that you have to do for the other ones.
Right,
their fellowship is 2,500 for a psyker. Experience for expert.
But see, like, the scum, which is the next one that I was going to say, like hive scum and stuff like that, they have the their strength and toughness. Their expert of it is 2,500 apiece for that, which is a lot. And then the last one is the tech priest, which more so than any other class in the entire game, so far, considering they're going to add... Okay, let me just there. So far, because they're going to add the Sisters of Battle in one of the books that they're coming out with. But the Tech Priest has a whole bunch of stuff where you can use Mechadrites, I think they're called, or Mechandrites. And those range for everything from heavy lifting type things to ballistic Mechadrites that have... laser pistols and
guns.
Last pistol, junk on the end of it. Guns, blowy uppy thingies. So that's about it for the classes. However, there are career paths, which they're called in here. However, there is another thing that you can use for your to just make your character a little different than everyone else is your homeworld, which can be one of four so far, which is a feral world, which is really hostile worlds. A feral world would be like a death world.
Think space wolves.
And then a hive world, which hopefully if you know anything about 40K, you'll know what that is. It's just massive cities that the levels are built one on top of each other. And then an imperial world, which is everything from a agricultural world to a paradise planet. And then voidborn, which is you're born in the void on a ship. So and then you have a whole bunch of different things, and then the for the Imperial Worlder, they have a little separated things like a Agri World, Backwater, Feudal, War, Dead, Shrine, Paradise, and those kind of things. Oh, the Dead World is in the Imperial World. Okay, but anyway, that's for that. Did you have any other like questions or stuff?
No, that's definitely pretty cool. I'm still looking forward to picking it up. So I kind of want to experience some of it for myself, just reading it. So. Yeah. Thanks for the input there, Tim. Chris, you got any questions about it? Any quick ones?
No, I was just gonna comment that I like how you progress through your career. I don't know if we should Tim, do you think we should say that now, or should we let people find out for themselves?
Did you want to hear about that, Steve, or not?
I guess just really quick, if you guys could just summarize it in like a minute. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, basically for the how you progress through your character class. Is you as a guardman, you start as like a grunt kind of, but I don't have my book open anymore, so I don't know exactly. But then you go
I got it.
But then you can go from a grunt to all the way down to something like a sniper.
Like you go to like a veteran, and then from there you can branch off into three different specialties.
Yeah, I know, but
I see.
But,
so you can
you go from one to like three for the guardsmen, and then other ones have like your single to branch to two of them. But each one of them has the same amount, like same, not necessarily amount, but the same levels. Like it goes five down, splits into three, and then each one of those three goes two down or so. But each of them have the same amount of levels for it, which if you're thinking, it's not the same kind of levels as in, what is it?
Fancy Rope.
Yeah, you just said it, Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh.
It's not that kind of level. It's just like tiers, almost. There we go. That kind of thing.
Oh, I see. All right. So kind of like levels, but it's kind of just representing it differently and taking advantage of more experience differently. Okay. So you can change your kind of like your jobs a little bit as you become more specialized in one field or another. And
yeah,
for
the guardsmen, there's a marksman, a sergeant kind of thing. And then, or a officer, and then a heavy weapons kind of guy.
Right.
Which obviously one is long range, one is heavy weapons, and then one is the officer type, which I don't really know what it does. I assume that it gives some kind of buffy junk or whatever. But actually, my favorite is the scribe, because it actually goes down about four or five. Then it branches off into two, and then those two branch back or like converge into a single one, and then you go down again. It's like that's kind of weird, because every other one of them, it kind of goes like a tree and a down and kind of that kind of thing. It's just kind of funny.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for your input there, Tim. And I'm gonna have to say that's gonna be about it for. That's gonna be it for today for that section. That was some great information there. And
I was going to say, I will actually, now since we've done this, I was actually going to do a full thing where people ask questions and I'll answer them on the podcast. However, one other thing is I'm going to make a thread where if you want to ask questions about the book, please do so, and I will try to answer them as best I can.
Right.
The forum.
As time goes on, more of us will have we'll have the rule book, so maybe some of the questions can be just answered on the forums, and some of the more common or maybe interesting questions we'll probably answer on the podcast for everyone to listen to.
Yeah, okay.
All right, so unfortunately we're not going to have any listener feedback today just due to time. We're already at about the hour mark, I believe. Not 100% sure there.
Yeah, we're almost at an hour.
That's what I
think. We're actually a little bit past an hour.
All right, so we're not going to have any listener feedback today, but we're going to make up for it next episode, so be sure to send in all of your questions, comments, army lists, anything else that you want to say to us to mwunion@gmail.com. So if you'd like to send in some 40K roleplay questions to Tim, go ahead. You can put it on the forum, so you can send it to our email that I just listed off, and or anything else you want to say. Say we're doing a good job, or say that you hate us. We would hope that's not the case, but still, feedback is feedback.
I hate, back.
Oh, harsh, harsh. No, understandable though too. Him.
Just kidding.
All right. So as I said, send all questions, comments, and army lists to mwunion@gmail.com. That's mwunion@gmail.com. Be sure to join us at the Miniatures Wargaming Union at www.mwunion.com. That's mwunion.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the Drop Podcast on iTunes and also leave us a review. Every review counts, guys, and makes us feel good about ourselves that you guys still enjoy our show. All right, so I just want to say that it's a shame that Steve couldn't lead us once again as he has for the past 37 episodes, but today he had some work to do and we had to get the podcast out, so he said to me, you know, Steve, we got to get it done, so I want you to take the reins for the day. So called up
and
got Tim and Chris together, and there we did it. So I hope you guys weren't too disappointed in Steve's absence today and that I did a satisfactory enough job for you guys. All right, and lastly, of course, I just want to say thanks to Tim and Chris for joining us today.
Yep, good to be here.
All right, awesome. And also I'd like to say thanks to all you guys, for all of you listeners there, for tuning in, and we'll see you next time on the Drop Podcast.